Why playing outdoors in nature in the bush, forest or park is so beneficial for tamariki. Our guest is Celia Hogan from Little Kiwis Nature Play. Celia has worked in outdoor education and nature education for the past 24 years. She's a passionate advocate for nature play and has petitioned Parliament for outdoor education licences to be issued for early childhood providers. Celia runs a bush kindy and a bush school for families in Ototahi, Christchurch, where there's a long waiting list. She also offers professional development training for teachers and parents on all things nature. Celia's running a nature play course for educators working with neurodiverse learners in Wellington next week. It's all about building confidence to use a local space or backyard for outdoor nature play to build sensory experiences, encourage a positive mindset, enable cooperation and build courage and resilience in tamariki. Celia, kia ora, welcome.
Oh, morena, Catherine. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you with us. It's something that some of us have taken for granted in our lives, but for many children, it is a lot more difficult. There are a lot more barriers than there used to be to get the amount of nature play that's good for us.
Yes, I think, you know, life is quite different compared to previous generations. We have a lot of different things coming into play. That can be from, you know, media fear-mongering parents and educators' health and safety. There's also things like urbanisation. You know, it's changed the way we play, fast cars on the road, you know, both parents working. Things are just different. And, yeah, we are seeing children not having as much access to outdoor play as what previous generations have had.
Intensified living in town as well, as we have this debate about the intensification of housing, we've got to build in green spaces that aren't too far away, right? Because that's another thing. The days when you had a backyard with trees in it to climb or a playhouse in it, much, much rarer now.
Absolutely. And some councils are really picking up on this and you know, making this a focal point for the way they design their, you know, their new subdivisions and that kind of thing. But also, like Wellington City Council, they have been doing some great work in the play space and activating their nature spaces and reserves and parks. And like that's really needed. And we need to have children having access to easy access, safe access to get to their local park. You know, for example, we live in quite a nice little kind of area that's protected from traffic, but to get to school we have to cross a super busy road, and that's also where the local park is. So, you know, like for it's also around safety and roads and access. So it's multifaceted.
What really amounts to nature play? That this is another thing. There was a big movement, of course, to push back against how safe we'd made playgrounds. Now, no one wants to be injuring, including especially seriously injuring children. However, there is an amount of physicality and skill learning and motor skill learning that goes on with play. And when we talk about nature play in particular, what are we talking about? It's not sitting on the floor and doing Lego. What are you talking about?
Yeah, so nature play is slightly different from outdoor play. And nature play is playing with the elements of nature and letting children lead their own play. So, for example, that can look like, you know, when I take my children for a walk. In fact, actually yesterday they had a teacher-only day and I was like, right, we're going for a walk on the hill, headed off. And partway along they see some branches on the side of the path and they're like, oh, we're just going to make a hut. And, you know, so they just start using natural resources to make and create. And we often talk about loose parts, which are things that can become many different things. So like a stick can become a wand, it can be a mixer, a stirrer, it can be a bow and arrow. Like it can be whatever the child's imagination can create with it. And so nature play allows children to lead their own play and follow. We also talk about like their play urges, the things that they're needing to do. And, you know, there is a lot of research that really supports allowing children to have the time to choose how they want to play. Because as we touched on before, life is quite different. We're in quite a structured society. We have, you know, they have to go to school. They might have after school classes, activities, and there's not a huge amount of time for children to choose how they want to play in an unstructured way. And it actually has an impact on mental health. You know, there's a researcher Peter Gray, he wrote the book Free to Learn. I think he's at the Boston College University in America. But he talks about the like intrinsic and extrinsic kind of locus of control. So if we don't have enough control over what we're choosing to do, we can feel out of control. And that's where that anxiety comes from and develops. So it's actually, yes, nature play, but also that allowing children to choose how they want to play in those environments is really key.
So what are some of the advice that you give to doing it well? And it may well depend on the child's age. I'm really interested in this particular play that you work with for neurodiverse learners. And some of the sensory components of that. But where do you start in thinking about what activities might work for children of different ages and with different needs?
Yeah, I think it always comes back to relationships first. You have to, you know, have a strong relationship. You know, with a parent, obviously, you're the parent, you're that dyad relationship anyway. But if you're a teacher, you know, it's developing strong connection with children, because what that also helps with is understanding where they're at, what stage or ability level they're at, so then you can offer. For example, when I'm starting with, you know, preschool infant children, when they are climbing a tree, I don't just stand back, but I don't hold them and lift them up to you know, assist their climbing. What I do is I do a technique called spotting, which is where I'm there to protect their head and shoulders if they are to fall. So I still, if they do fall, I still allow them to feel gravity. But what I do is I just protect that head and shoulders and maybe slow it slightly, but they need to feel gravity to be able to keep themselves safe next time. So, you know, that's where I'd start. And as depending on the child and their abilities, you know, you might be doing that for a 7, 8, 9-year-old. It depends where they're at. But when you feel comfortable and the child feels comfortable, we can kind of take a step back and allow them to do that themselves. So it is about knowing your child, and it's knowing how they behave in those environments. You know, some people are nervous if they've got a child who's a bit of a runner, and, you know, that's really valid. So it's like, okay, well, how do we manage that in this environment? And that's probably quite a long conversation, but knowing our children is key, but letting them choose it. So if I'm there with my children and say, hey, let's go over here and do this, you know, that's adult-led. Yes, they're still going to play, but it's something that I've chosen. So it's about just saying, hey, just choose what you want to do. For some children, that's going to be quite difficult, to be honest, because if they've had quite a structured life, that's going to be a bit outside their comfort zone. So some scaffolding can really support them in that. And scaffolding is where we might make a small suggestion, but then let them choose, or we might offer them two or three ideas and then they can choose. So does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. And with the work you're going to be doing next week for educators working with neurodiverse learners, what are the particular tips or techniques, I guess, that you bring to these educators and, of course, to these students?
So a lot of it, I think, is what I have been talking about with the lady I'm organising this with is we've been talking about how often teachers feel nervous if we have neurodiverse learners, and going outside can be way outside their comfort zone. So we're going to be talking about, okay, well, like we talked about, well, what does nature play look like for our students? Which ones might need more support, i.e. might be an extra adult support to come in for that student? But it also could be that we're talking about, okay, well, how do we manage the space? What are we doing? How are we keeping our children safe? Where do we position ourselves as the adults in the space? And so we're going to look at it from that. And there'll be, I often kind of free flow a little bit in those conversations, because you never know what's going to come out and what kind of students the teachers have. So it will be responding to what they are requesting. Another thing that kind of comes into it is making the case for play. And so I'll be doing that in the PD and the evening talks I'm doing as well in Wellington, with Wellington City Council, because I think that's where it's about confidence, and not to make an assumption, but a lot of people who come to me tend to be women. And what I find with men is they're like, oh, no, we'll just go out and do it. And women are like, oh, well, I'm not sure how. I just need some more confidence. So a lot of it is just boosting confidence. And we can do that by talking about what the benefits of this kind of play are, you know, what children are actually gaining and getting out of this, to kind of set that foundation, and then looking at the how we keep them safe, how we manage groups, what is it going to look like for our learners?
What are schema, loose parts, and risky play?
Oh, fantastic. So schema are play urges, and we see this a lot, especially in the early years. It's where we talk about it from an education perspective, where children are doing repeated behaviours over and over. For example, if a child's learning how to jump, they will have to practice that over and over and over again until they, you know, there's a kind of connected neural pathway in their brain. It can be like 90 repetitions of this. So they might jump up on down on the couch, and as a parent you go, oh, stop jumping on the couch. But that desire for them to learn how to jump and teach themselves how to jump is just intrinsic, is coming from within, and it is about them developing their brain. So rather than responding and saying, no, you can't jump up on down on the couch, we can redirect, because often children will carry on jumping up and down on the couch once we've said, please stop. So it's redirecting, understanding that they are developing and growing their brain. So there are a number of different schemas, from jumping, climbing. You'll probably remember, like collecting and gathering. You have children who come home filled with stones in their pockets, or you've got a car load full of sticks. They're the collector and gatherer. There's construction and element play. You know, there's a huge list of them, but often these are supported by loose parts. And so we talked about loose parts before. And in nature, if you've got a variety of natural resources and loose parts available, often these schema will play out naturally. So when we're looking at choosing a space to go to, we do want to make sure that there are enough natural loose parts that are left, because, you know, as we know, a lot of parts get cleared from, you know, sticks and nuts and seeds and stones. You know, everything's quite manicured. So it's also allowing our parks to have some of these natural resources for play. And then lastly, you were talking about risky play. So risky play, I love risky play. There's eight elements of risky play from Alan Sansetter, who's a researcher who's talked through these. And she talks about play from a height, play with speed, play with getting lost. So that could be making a hut or hiding place. There's rough and tumble. And she talks about dangerous elements. I don't really like the term dangerous, but that's her terminology. And that's fire, water, earth, and And then dangerous tools, so real tools. And if we can allow children to engage in some of these risky play activities, we're really supporting them with their own self-confidence, their sense of belonging. There's also a lot of benefits around just their ability to assess risk for themselves. And I think one thing I do want to point out here, there is a difference between a learning injury and a life-altering injury. And you know, risky play, people think it's really, you know, dangerous stuff, but it's okay for children to get like a cut, a bruise, a bump, a scratch, and even a simple broken bone can be classed in there. That's called a learning injury. What we're not talking about when we say risky play is dangerous play, where there's potential for significant harm. You know, that's drowning, that could be a fall from a great height. That stuff is, you know, that's where we as adults need to manage that risk and step in. That is our role. If there is significant harm about to happen, we need to come in and say, hey, I can see that, this is looking like a bit dangerous, or this looks like it might not be so safe. What do you think? Should we step back from that and have a conversation?
Thanks very much, Celia Hogan of Little Kiwis Nature Play.